Blog Talk Radio.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Hello, hello everyone, and welcome once again. It's Sunday, May 17th, 2015. Team. Celebrate another day on this earth. Yes, sir. I am JT, aka the Master. And as always, this is the Master Plan. And the number to call in is 347-637-3220. It's a place to be. If you want to talk to me, have a chat room sitting out there for you. You could jump in the chat room. If you rather not talk to me, I don't know why you wouldn't, but if that's your that's your personal choice, you can do that. But let's celebrate today. Fine day in May, halfway through May. Here we go. We're going to be talking about the NBA. We're going to be talking about the NFL. We're going to be talking about boxing. I watched a few boxing matches last night that really intrigued me, and I want to talk about them. And we're talking about a fantasy baseball trade that I pulled off with a friend of mine, and give you my opinion of it. Hopefully, he may join in and give his side of it. But with that being said, let's listen a little bit more to Kool and the Gang in celebration, and I'll be right back. That's what it's about today. Let's have a good time. All right, I'm back. I'm back and ready to talk some smack. How about that? Oh, boy. I'm feeling pretty good this morning, people. Anyway, let me stop my stammering and stuttering and get down to business about what we're going to be talking about today. Like I said, a little bit of boxing, a little bit of NBA, a little bit of NFL, and a little bit of fantasy baseball. We're going to spread. We're going to sprinkle all that in into this one little short hour that we have. Maybe a little longer we go, but the show is slated for just an hour. And that's what we're going to do. All right. Which way do I want to go? Let's go this way first. How about the boxing last night, people? If you watched HBO, there were two bouts on HBO that caught my attention. And one of them was in the flyweight division. And the other one was in the, I do believe, the middleweight division. The one I wanted to talk about first, which really, this is an upcoming star, people. I've never heard this guy, but I watched him last night in his first wide American television exposure. On HBO, I'm talking about Roman Chocolito Gonzalez versus Edgar Sosa for the flyweight title. The flyweight title, okay? And talking about entertaining, this guy was a technician. I'm talking about Roman Chocolito Gonzalez. Like I said, he went against a former junior flyweight title holder, and Edgar Sosa, a seasoned guy and a well-respected guy in the boxing world, in especially in the weight class that we're talking about. And he took him apart, people. I'm telling you, he took him apart. And it only lasted two rounds. He threw 130 punches, landed 72 of them at a 55% rate, while his opponent, Sosa, threw 106 punches, but only landed 14. So with his skill as a boxer, as an offensive boxer, he had defensive skills also. And he only allowed Sosa to land 13% of his punches. Quite naturally, he said he was very happy with his performance. One of his idols, and I don't blame him, he's a Hispanic fighter, quite naturally, Gonzalez. He said that through a translator, by the grace of God, and this is a quote for him, by the grace of God and through my training with the late Alexis Arguello, I was able to put on a performance like this. And then quite naturally, because this is his first appearance on HBO, and anybody who is trying to establish themselves in the public eye, either through Showtime or HBO, is going to be happy. And the end of his quote is, I am so happy to be here on HBO, quite naturally, because you're going to get paid. If you put on a good show and you become a draw, and this kid, I do believe, is going to become a draw. I always like the lightweight divisions because they seem like they throw a lot more punches and their fights are light, a lot more interesting. Well, this guy, was dynamic. In the second round, Gonzalez just totally blew this guy away. He landed a right hand to and brought Sosa to a knee for the first knockdown. Then it was a left-right combination that dropped him to his rear end for the second knockdown. And then after that, he unloaded a barrage of punches. And Sosa went down along the ropes, and the referee had to step in and called the bout off without a count because he was getting toasted in the ring. Let me put it that way. Peppered. He had no defense. The guy was just, he had him on the ropes, literally had him on the ropes. He went down, and the ref stepped in at 2 minutes and 37 seconds into the round and called it TKO. So Gonzalez now is 43-0, 37 knockouts versus the guy he fought was Sosa, 51-9, 30 KO. So this Sosa, and like I said, he was a former junior flyweight title holder, was a seasoned boxer, seasoned veteran, going up against this kid. Sosa was 27. Gonzalez, 27. Excuse me. Sosa was 35. Gonzalez, as a title holder, is now 27. So now he is the strawweight and junior flyweight champion. And I can see bigger and better things with guys that go up against this kid. And let me bring in my fellow boxing connoisseur that always likes to, and hopefully watch these two bouts, and hopefully we could talk about them, because I was more impressed with the lighter boxing match than I was with the Triple G match. But we'll bring in Macau right now and see what he has to say. Welcome, my friend. How you doing?
What's happening, man?
All right.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, man. I watched two bouts last night, and both of them, I enjoyed them. Not that I don't really enjoy any boxing match, but I really enjoyed the flyweight, junior flyweight match between Gonzalez and Sosa. I don't know if you caught that match. That was on the same card with Triple G and then James Monroe. What's your thoughts?
Oh, I missed it. I fell asleep because I was so tired. I was working, and I had to jump. It was coming up like after like Bessie on HBO. And
right.
I just laid there, and I was like, all right, I'm going to watch this. And the next thing you know, I was gone. I've been waiting to see that fight between Golovkin and Monroe Jr. Because you know who Willie Monroe's father is, right?
No.
Yeah, Willie Monroe Sr. You know, there's only been, like, really three dudes. Well, actually, there's only been, like, two dudes that ever put it to Marvin Hagler. You know, one of them
okay.
was John the Beast Mugabe.
Yeah.
You know, and the other one is Willie Monroe Sr. He beat the hell out of Marvin Hagler. I mean, Sugar
okay.
Ray won. You know, Sugar Ray won, but he ain't beat him. You know what I mean? He just boxed mm-hmm. his outboxer. But yeah, Young had come from some good pedigree. So what happened? Did he get knocked out?
Well, let me put it this way. In that bout, well, yeah, he did get knocked out. Yeah, the bottom line, in the sixth round, he did get knocked out. But let me tell you something. Let me just say this. My boy's got a lot of heart. He has a lot of heart, and he's got a hell of a chin because Golovkin knocked him down in a few rounds, a couple rounds. And he went down and thought looked like he wasn't going to get back up. When he finally stopped him in the sixth round, he knocked him down. I think he may have knocked him down twice. The second time he knocked him down, the kid barely got up on the 10 count. The ref walked up to him, grabbed his gloves. He said, "Show me your eyes. Look at me. Are you able to continue?" Now, this is the first time I've ever seen this, but it was probably the best thing that he could have done. He told the ref, "I'm done." He was. You could see the look on his face, and he was barely able to stand up on his two feet. That if he said, "I'm good," if he said, "I was good." I don't know if he would sustain some serious damage if the ref let him continue. So he said, "I'm done." But let me put it this way. If you see the fight, and I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to see the fight in a few rounds, not just one, in a few rounds, he got knocked down. I think in round two or three, he got knocked down twice and got up and, went at Golovkin. And I think his first game plan was to kind of get on his bicycle and kind of stick and move, which was the wrong game plan because it seemed like Golovkin was taking advantage of that. When he realized that, and I think he had no choice, that it was no need in him just running because his best way of boxing and fighting Golovkin was to, if you can believe this, not dance, stand right in front of him and just throw punches. And that's when he was scoring. And that's he was hitting Golovkin with some solid shots. Golovkin must have a hell of a chin because the type of shots that Mr. Monroe was throwing, another fighter I do believe would have went down. So I gotta give it to the boy. He fought a valiant fight. He just was against a guy that had a lot heavier hands than he did.
Oh, man. You know, we've been saying that Youngin took this fight. He took this fight too early. And
that's
just what you told me shows it. I mean,
yeah.
Cause it like Golovkin really knows how to cut that ring off, man.
Yeah. Oh,
that
yeah.
That dude right there really knows how to cut off the ring.
Right.
You know, but still, he's still flat-footed. You still should be able to box him. You still right. should be able to. It's there. I don't know, man. But
well, you know they're gonna. I'm sorry.
I was hoping Youngin would you know, give him some gold because he got, you know, because he got pedigree. He got pedigree. He got solid pedigree. He got solid genes, man. But yeah, I don't know, man.
Well, I'm telling you, you should, you know, everybody pretty much knew what the outcome was going to be. You know, just it was, I think it was just a matter of what round. I'm telling you, and I tell you again, if you are able to catch this card, and not just Golovkin, I'm talking about the fight before it with Chocolito. Chocolito Gonzalez and Sosa fight.
They said that was gonna be a good little match.
Let me tell you something, man. I don't know if you ever seen Gonzalez fight.
Technician
in the ring. Took Sosa apart. Took him apart. And I'm telling you, dropped him in the second round. Dropped him in the second round. Let me put it. He dropped him, and the ref had to step in and say, "That's enough." I'm telling you, he dropped him three times two rounds. Took him apart. I never heard this dude before. I've never heard of this Chocolito Gonzalez before, and I'm looking at. This guy has some power for being such a light fighter. He's got some heavy hands, and I'm telling you, he took Edgar Sosa apart.
Wow.
It was no contest. Right from the beginning, you knew it was no contest. And like Golovkin's fight, you just had to say what round is going to happen in. And it just happened to happen in the second round. I was totally surprised. I forgot about it, and I happened to be flipping in HBO, and they had just started the fight. Just before it started, I jumped in, and they were talking about this Chocolito Gonzalez. I was saying, who the heck is this guy? And it was a preliminary fight, even though it was a title fight. I'm saying, well, let me look at this because I want to see what the Golovkin is going to do with James Monroe. And I'm like, wow, I was amazed. This kid is good, man. You said you saw him before. He took Sosa apart. Apart. Wow. Looked like a sparring match. Let me put it that way. Looked like a sparring match. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
First appearance on HBO, and I'm telling you, you got a star in the making. If he can get quality opponents in that lighter divisions in the flyweight, junior flyweight, and strawweight, you're going to see a lot of this kid, man, because he's an exciting fighter. He put on a very good show for the only two rounds that he was in there.
Man.
So, yeah. So, yep. You shouldn't have fell asleep. You shouldn't have fell asleep because you would have been more impressed with the that fight, even though it only lasted two rounds. And I just had, like I said, I got to give it to Monroe because he had a heart. Because I thought he was done after two or three rounds. I forget which round that Monroe got dropped a couple times. And I thought one of them, that's it, this is over. He came back. He even won a round, which I was surprised. He even won a round when he realized, like I said, when he realized he couldn't get on his bicycle, and he had a hard time when he was trying to circle the ring and basically, I wouldn't say dance, but move around Golovkin. He had a problem because he was always getting caught on the ropes. And that's when Golovkin was doing his business.
Can't go to the ropes with Golovkin. Can't do it.
Yeah.
You got to make him reset. And while he's resetting, you got to get out of there. You got to. That shows he's young. He still don't know. He's still young with it. They said he wasn't ready for this fight, man. they said he wasn't ready for this fight. It's too early. It's too early for Golovkin. But, you know, wasn't nobody giving him no fights, though. But nobody trying to give him a fight.
He's the type of fighter nobody wants to fight. Is that what you're telling me?
No, he's not. But he just wasn't getting no fights. Monroe wasn't getting no fights, man.
What was the reason for that?
I don't know, man. I have no idea. You know, I got no idea. But he really should have been like, you know, doing. He shouldn't have went up against Golovkin. Absolutely not. Whoever his manager is, they need to be fired. They need to be fired.
I wasn't too impressed with his trainer. He didn't seem like he was giving all that good a direction between the rounds. So, I think he may need a better management on all around. So,
yeah, that's a bad move. You didn't take that fight, man. No Gennady Golovkin. And this is really the fight that you get introduced to the public. Because don't nobody even remember your father. That's messed up. Only real boxing jokers remember his father.
I got to look on YouTube and see if I can remember this guy. What's his name again?
Willie Monroe.
Okay.
Yeah, Willie Monroe versus Marvin Hagler. He beat the shit out of Marvin Hagler. Look, he beat the hell out of him. I mean, he beat him.
Okay. Did he? Who won the fight? Did Hagler win the fight or Monroe?
Monroe won that fight.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, he may beat the heck out of him, but you know, like they like to give it to the marquee guy. Excuse me.
No, Hagler was the marquee dude.
Right.
Hagler was the marquee dude.
Okay.
Like I said, you know, I know you remember John the Beast Mugabe.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, when him and Marvin went in there, Mugabe gave Hagler some go. Monroe gave it to him first.
Wow. I got to watch this then. I definitely got to watch that. All right. All right. We're going to move on from the boxing. Okay. And I want to talk about the NBA playoffs. And in particular, the only game 7 in the second round, the only team that's not decided on who's going to go to the conference finals. The two teams are set to go to the conference finals in the Eastern Conference, and that would be the Cleveland Cavaliers, led by LeBron James, versus the Atlanta Hawks, led by the Atlanta Hawks, meaning that's a team effort. For the simple fact is there's no guys that are looking to get the spotlight. Everyone is it's all in one. Let me put it that way. And they are playing as a unit, a la the San Antonio Spurs. No one is better than the whole. Okay, so my thoughts, Mikal, is that the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to have their hands full, specifically LeBron James, because. In my opinion, I want to get yours. In my opinion, I said this yesterday to Victor, and I'll say it again, that they've got the concept. And just like in the NFL, just like in the NBA, there's a copycat league. When a formula works, a lot of teams are going to copy it, and players take notice of what works for successful organizations. Last year, the San Antonio Spurs, the Miami Heat, through not just one individual, not just two individuals, through team play, took them apart because they didn't have a go-to guy. The go-to guy was whoever got the ball in the best situation was the go-to guy. They played team ball, which was beautiful to watch. And an old school type of basketball, in my opinion, way back in the day when teams didn't just have isolations, they had guys and played team ball. The Atlanta Hawks do that. They play team ball. Now, quite naturally, if a guy's hot, they're going to feed him. But the overall concept of the Atlanta Hawks is to play team basketball, move the ball around to the guy with the best shot, and he takes that shot. Not give it to the one guy, and hopefully he can carry the team. Conversely, the Cleveland Cavaliers can't do that because Kyrie Irving is banged up. He's really banged up. They have Iman Shumpert. They have J.R. Smith, and then they have LeBron James. The only consistent player, game in and game out for the most part, is LeBron James. J.R. Smith is inconsistent. Iman Shumpert is inconsistent. Kyrie Irving, banged up, is inconsistent and hasn't been playing up to his regular season level. And then they have Tristan Thompson, who is basically a defensive guy and rebounding guy. They have no Kevin Love. In my opinion, this is my opinion, in the Eastern Conference, I think it's up for the taking, and I think this is the best shot that Atlanta has because I think they're a different team than Atlanta Hawks of past with no heart and crawled at pressure time. I think the Atlanta Hawks take this series and move on to the NBA Finals. Give me your thoughts on both those teams and who you think is going to advance.
I slightly agree with you. I'm leaning to agree with you. But the only thing that gives me pause is LeBron James.
I knew you were going to say that.
it's the only thing to give me pause. It depends on which LeBron shows up. You know what I'm saying? If LeBron, because honestly, LeBron could thug them two boys. He really could. He really could thug Horford and Millsap. He could thug both of them if he wants to, you know. And this is the thing I like, and this is the thing I hate about LeBron, right? I know that, you know what I mean. He know that, but he don't play like he know that. You know what I mean? He get up there and run up there and try to play like he a shooting guard or a two guard, which is okay, cause he's all world. But that's not what they need to win the games, well. It's not what they need. Now you ain't got no Kevin Love. You need to get down in the hole, Slim. Get down in the hole and thug them dudes. Cause they already in awe of you, Slim. All you gotta do is take advantage of it. This is what I understand about LeBron. I don't understand it. I really don't. And I don't understand these Jordan and LeBron people that keep saying LeBron better, and I just don't see the thug. I'm like, yo, where you at? Slim, I know it's there. You just showed it a couple times. He in there. Where is that now? But at the same time, the one thing that you said, I totally agree with you, he has been the most consistent. He's always consistent. He shows up. You know he's going to be there. He'll take and carry the team on his back. But it's like waiting for the mailman. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like, you know it's coming, and he got to get here. But he's just taking his damn time. Like, what are you doing? This game could be over, you know? Get down in the hole, throw some elbows. You know what I'm saying? Funk the junk on them. Take they hot. That's it. Take they hot. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just crazy and then I got my old age, but I don't know. But I definitely would lean towards Atlanta Hawks taking this junk. But it depends on which LeBron shows up.
Well, let me put it this way. The way things are going, okay, if you watch the last few teams, that the teams that have been successful, look at the teams that have been successful for the most part. I'm talking about the Atlanta Hawks. They got the second best record in the NBA, and the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. They play team ball for the most part. Cleveland, when they had Kevin Love and a healthy Kyrie Irving, they were spreading the ball around with team love. Yeah, okay, I say it like that.
Right.
But and then at times LeBron would take over, which I understand. Okay. On the other side, you got the Golden State Warriors. Now, this team, they score 110 points. They give up less than 100. The average margin of victory is 10 points. They had Mark Jackson, and they were successful, but not successful enough for the ownership to keep Mark Jackson and retain him. And they brought in a first-year coach in Steve Kerr. And a lot of people, including myself, were a little skeptical of Steve Kerr and what he could do with the Golden State Warriors. And not realizing the personality and the intelligence of Steve Kerr in being able to handle, and if for lack of a better word, and to get through to the Golden State Warriors and that very young team of theirs. The team concept of playing basketball and also playing defense on the other end of the court. Well, he's allowed these guys to take it to the next level. The two Splash Brothers are like the most fun backcourt duo that you would want to watch, including the MVP, who's phenomenal and uncanny and probably once in a generation type of shooter that can rain 3 points like nobody's business. Now, Klay Thompson is no slouch either. So if you try to stymie Steph Curry, Klay Thompson will kill you, and vice versa. And Steve Kerr and the Golden State Warriors, and I got to believe that this is what really convinced me and turned me around about Steve Kerr, or all the flash and dash that they had over the past season up to this point. But when they played Memphis, and Memphis seemed like they had their number and took them apart and went up 2-1, and at the third game, it took them apart and it looked like the Golden State Warriors were lost. Steve Kerr made some adjustments in the next game, and Golden State rattled off 3 straight wins to move on to the Western Conference Finals. A lot of confidence. These kids have no conscience. Play team ball like nobody's business. The MVP of the league is one of the humblest guys. It seems like the most down-to-earth guys that you would want to be. Let me put it this way. In my opinion, if I had a daughter, and I don't have a daughter, but in my opinion, he's the kind of kid I would want to marry my daughter, because this kid looked like he was raised the right way. Dale Curry and his wife did a good job, Dale Curry being a former NBA player. Different kind of player than his son. Dale Curry was a one-trick pony, spot-up shooter. That's all he was. Steph Curry's the total package. He's a little light on the defensive side, but he's got everything you would want on the offensive side. They play team ball, and Steph Curry's the leader of that. They're waiting for the winner of the and I want to talk about this, because these two teams are enigma, both of them. Houston Rockets and the Los Angeles Clippers, who had a 19-point second half win, a lead, and a 14 or 13-point lead going into the fourth quarter, and gets outscored on their home court, Mikal, 40-15 in the fourth quarter. 40-15 in the fourth quarter on your home court with a closeout game to move on to the finals. How can you do that when you have Blake Griffin and Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan on your team? talk to me, man. What the hell happened there? You know, they got to be thinking they're going back to Houston when Houston, Dwight Howard, who I cannot stand at all. And James Harden, who plays no defense. It's all Mr. Offense. And both these teams have the same record. I don't understand. Give me a winner because it's up in the air. It's going to be very interesting who wins this game, regardless of who does. But they're going up against the Golden State. Give me your thoughts, man, on Houston and the L.A. Clippers, two teams that are enigma, I should say. Talk to me.
Let me go to Houston first. Houston, we got a problem. And his name is Dwight Howard. I don't like him either, man. I swear. I think you and I, he's like 5'8", 5'7", me and you can go take that dude out. Straight up. I don't like him, man. I don't like that dude. But I do like James Harden. You know what I mean? I do like him. He needs a Robin. You know what I mean? He needs a Robin because he's clearly Batman.
Right.
And I really don't see him over there. I thought Ariza was going to be that dude because he got that all-around game, can, like, mesh with James Harden or whatever. But, you know, it's working out, you know, because they won game from the Western Conference. So, I mean, it's no sneeze. So, I don't know. And then they got a good coach, Kevin McHale. You know, he's been in the trenches. He knows what time it is, and he knows his personnel and stuff like that. So it's a good team. I don't the Clippers. I like Doc Rivers. You know, Chris Paul is a beast. I like DeAndre Jordan. I even like Blake's little weak ass. Right, I like him too. It's just that sometimes they just disappear, man. It's just like, yo, where these dudes at? Both of these teams, they do the same thing, man. They just disappear.
Yep. You know,
like, what in the world is going? Am I looking at the right team here? I think both of these teams are a mirror reflection of each other. You know what I'm saying? Almost a mirror reflection of each other. I don't know. It's a toss up on that game. I don't even care. Both of them are about the same. I'm gonna lean more towards the Clippers, more so, because I really like Doc and Chris Paul. I really like them two dudes. And you know that center over there, Houston. I just he dead weight. But Steph Curry is a cold beast. And the Splash Brothers, yo, we've been in love with them dudes for the past two or three seasons. We done talked about them youngins for a minute.
And right.
We were talking about them when they were, of course, under Mark Jackson.
Right.
I was skeptical of the move, too, but I wasn't skeptical of Steve Kerr, right? I wasn't skeptical of him. I just didn't like the aesthetics of the look, if you will. You know what I mean? I'm going to be nice. I just didn't like the aesthetics of the move. You know, I really didn't like that. But I knew Steve Kerr was bona fide because from two different styles of winning. He came from the Jordan way, and he came from the San Antonio way. So he knows how to win. He definitely knows how to win. And then when he was giving his analysis of the game, he really showed a lot. I liked listening to him. He was very informative. He wasn't too much. He wasn't too little. You know, he gave a little personality, but not much. You know what I mean? It was like right there enough. So I knew he had the good, right? That game when they were down from Memphis, he definitely showed he definitely showed some more.
Yep.
He definitely showed a lot more. Because I didn't understand how Memphis, like, Memphis came in, lost the first jump, and then the Bama with the face pellet in his eye or whatever, Conley, he come back and changed the whole series. I'm like, really? I never thought he was that good. I know he's good, but I didn't think he was that good. I mean, he was out that one game. Golden State had their way. This dude come back, and Memphis is like a totally different team. Unbelievable.
Right.
Unbelievable. Right. That was just much respect to Conley. He gets more respect from me because of that. But Golden State, they figured out a way to win. Kerr has got them boys humming, playing. Do look better than they did with Mark Jackson. They
yep.
definitely do.
Yep.
I got them coming out of it. Doesn't matter which one of those two teams come out of there to that wins today. It's going to be Golden State. It's going to be Golden State, and I would like to see Golden State and the Hawks, but it may be Golden State and LeBron, depending on how bad he want it. Depending on how bad he want it, because, like I said, it's like waiting on the mailman. No, it's coming. Lord have mercy. You get the mailman and stop at the liquor store, play his numbers, do all that stuff, and then come deliver the mail, man. It's just crazy.
That's just like watching the TV and screaming at the TV. Come on, man! It's your time. You need to do this, and
right.
him not listening. I hear you. I hear you. Mm-hmm. You know, I would think, and this is me. Atlanta Hawks, who play team basketball against the Golden State Warriors, who also play team basketball. In my opinion, that will be more entertaining because these two guys, these two teams, I should say, would be a chess match because the fact is they would be playing team basketball against each other. And I would think probably high scoring games and may the best scorer win. Let me put it that way. May the best scoring team win, in my opinion, because the number one and number two in the NBA in record wise would be the Atlanta Hawks and the Golden State Warriors. Atlanta Hawks score 102 points and give up 97, and the Golden State Warriors score 110 and give up just short of 100 points. So in my opinion, it would be high scoring games. And would be very entertaining, even though it wouldn't have the star power if LeBron James was included in there. And conspiracy theorists can say can jump all over this, that you got to watch what happens in this finals if it's going to be favorite call wise for LeBron and the Cavaliers, or is it going to be called evenly, like you would hope it would be. And the best team win without the help of the men with the whistles. But we'll have to wait and see about that because when's the first game? The first game starts, I would think, Monday, Tuesday, something like that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, like Tuesday or Wednesday.
So let me see when the first game starts. The first game starts...
Should be
the first games. Nope. The first game starts Tuesday. Golden State Warriors play whoever's the winner of between Houston and LA, and the Cleveland Cavaliers first game is on Wednesday at Atlanta. Game one. So we'll have to wait and see. And I don't know how that equates out. The Golden State Warriors play first, and the Houston Rockets and the Clippers only get one day of rest before they have to really go to Golden State.
Yep.
That's a disadvantage. That's the penalty you pay for having a same seven game series and have to play the seventh game, regardless of where it's played. All right. We'll see what happens. I'm not saying the first game is going to set the tone, but we'll have to wait and see starting Tuesday. That game is on ESPN at 9 o'clock, either Houston or L.A. Now, L.A. can't stand, and it's vice versa, the Warriors. So that could be a war in itself right there because these two teams really, 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 and I'll say it again, really do not like each other at all. They've had history in the regular season and for the last two seasons. And that would be very interesting. Chris Paul and Blake Griffin against the Golden State Warriors and their team. All right, let's move on. We're going to talk about the NFL right now. And the news in the NFL.
Hold up. You ain't talk about my Buzzards.
Your Wizards?
Them heartbreaking fools. Man, them Bama's get me all the time. They get me all the time.
I feel for you.
Hold on. Like, I am not a Wizards fan. I'm not.
Right.
But because they always heartbreaking, right? But as soon as I think it's a slither, I try to creep right in and start watching and paying attention. You know what I'm saying?
He pulled you right in.
You got the hometown. And let me say this. John Wall, a beast. From
yes.
now and forever, I will not say anything negative about John Wall. That dude is a soldier. I don't know why he's not getting the respect he deserves, but he's a cold beast. And I'm going to tell you what, man. When that Bama hit that three, I went off in here. I was like, oh, my God. That dude is the truth. Then I sat back down, and they were showing the replay, and it was 1 second late. I was like, oh. Typical Wizard.
No, it wasn't one second. McCow. It wasn't 1 second. It was point one. That's how close it was. It was 0.1 second off. And that was, you're right, that was a shame. And Paul Pierce is the truth. He's a beast, man. It's cold blooded. When it comes to a game winning shot, that's one of the dudes that you want to take it because he has no fear, no fear whatsoever. And a lot of guys run away from the ball. Paul Pierce, give me the ball. Give me the ball. Yeah. And unfortunately, it was point one from being a different story between those two teams. I got another call on the line. I do believe I know who this is. Let me bring him on and see what he's got to say. Call from the 678. I think this is Lance, my man. How you doing?
Good morning, Jerry. Anybody else who was on the line, I just tuned in. You guys know I'm out here in California, so
right.
20 minutes from 8 a.m., but up early and just thought I'd give a call into the show. Love the master plan. And I just got a couple of different topics I haven't been able to call into the show today or Thursday,
right.
The last couple of weeks. So,
right.
Yeah, I just got some different topics I wanted to throw around with you guys. So I'll kind of just get in where I fit in. But I did hear the last part that you were speaking on, Paul Pierce, and I'll just co-sign on that. I think Pierce had a great career. I've been a Paul Pierce fan since his days back at the University of Kansas. He was a highly touted All-American coming out of high school. And he had a great career. I'm happy that he was able to get a ring and make a couple finals. And I think you hit it on the head, Jerry, and again, anybody else who might have co-signed that if he does not decide to come back, he's had an outstanding career. And I think that he certainly needs to be mentioned as one of the top closers in the NBA the last 5 to 7 or 8 years. Pierce has always been the guy to take big shots, even when Boston wasn't having that much success, when they had Antoine Walker and those guys, and even when he got Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen, the year they won the finals. You remember they played the Lakers, which Pierce is from LA, and he averaged about 26 points that series. Was able to go toe-to-toe with Kobe Bryant. You know, he played at a very high level, and I got nothing but respect for Pierce. Like you said, hit a couple buzzer beaters or a potential buzzer beater, that one that they didn't miss. But I think he filled his role for what Washington had him in perfectly, which was, hey, you know, we may not need you for 4 quarters, and I know they would have liked to see a better shooting performance from Pierce, 1 out of 7, 4 points in that final game. But his role really was to be a guy to come in, make big shots, especially when the team needed it in the fourth quarter. And I think he did a great job of doing that. Definitely, like you said, Jerry, a guy not afraid to take the big shot at all.
All right. Lance, I'm glad you jumped in here. We were talking about, I think you're from Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken. I know you live out on the West Coast, but I think you're from Atlanta. Am I not right about that?
You know what, Jerry? Originally from New York, but I did live in Atlanta for 9 years. So
that's right. Yeah, that's right. Well, let me ask you this. Now, right now, we know who the Eastern Conference final participants are. We Mikel and I have talked about it. Mikel is leaning toward Cleveland. I'm leaning toward Atlanta because of the team play versus LeBron James, who's a consistent player.
Nah. No. I'm leaning towards Atlanta.
Okay. No problem. So, this is the deal here then. Atlanta, which is a team concept type of playing that they instill in their players, and they do it on the court with the second best record in the NBA, versus LeBron James, who's the most consistent player on the Cleveland Cavaliers, with a cast of characters that can be lethal when they're at their best, and they could be the worst when they're at their worst. I'm Mikel, who's on here, and we welcome Mikel also. Are leaning toward the Atlanta Hawks. How are you looking at this series, Atlanta versus Cleveland?
Yeah, no doubt. It's about Cleveland. It's not Atlanta's time. I think you look at the Atlanta Hawks, and this season has been a success for them to go to win 60 games, have the number one overall seed in the Eastern Conference, and to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. That's a successful season. That is a progress. This franchise hasn't ever had a conference final, so they've made it as far as they're going to go this year. This is where the buck stops. Look, it's about LeBron James, and I'll kind of cater this into, because he's one of the things I want to talk about. I'll make sure I'm really brief. But it's about LeBron's power in the East, in the Eastern Conference. If you look at the teams in the East, I think that no matter what team LeBron James would have went to, Washington, Atlanta, Chicago, you look at those top teams, they would have been in the same exact position. He's the one guy in that conference who holds all the weight. Now, I do think if Miami had a healthy Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, they would have made the playoffs. And I honestly wanted to see them in there, because with Bosh, with Wade, they made the trade for the point guard from Phoenix. I thought they certainly had the experience when it came to playing good playoff basketball. But it's about LeBron James. This is the thing that makes LeBron James so special and so dominant. Not only the offense, it's his defense. And when I look at the Eastern Conference, I look at how basketball has played out the last couple years. Not only does LeBron James do it on the offensive end, when they won that title against OKC, he took out their best player. He made life difficult on Kevin Durant. The next year when they beat the Spurs in the finals, even though San Antonio should have won that series or could have won that series, he checked Tony Parker. He's the only guy that has the ability, if need be, to take the other player's top team out. And, I mean, look, I think that Kyrie's Irving injury certainly is going to factor in. I think that you certainly miss Kevin Love, and you have to look at Cleveland and say, okay, you're going to still need a team effort, especially if Kyrie Irving is not healthy 100%. Definitely J.R. Smith and those other guys are going to step up. But when I look at the Eastern Conference, teams really have a hard time scoring. And that was the problem with Chicago, and I think with Atlanta as well, that, you know, if Cleveland locks in defensively, and Iman Shumpert is now over there, it's just not a good matchup. They don't have anybody that can guard LeBron James. Yet, again, if LeBron James needs to check Jeff Teague or whoever the other team has to offer who's potentially causing problems, he'll completely take him out the way. And let's not forget, look, this is a chance for LeBron James is still in the process of building a legacy. He's looking at his third straight titles staring in his face. It's not going to happen. Fellas, I can tell you, Atlanta may make it a good series. I'm actually going to be in Atlanta this week, so I'm excited about that. I'll be able to catch a game while I'm out there. But the Hawks, they just don't have the star power. When I look at, you know, Damari Carroll, I mean, I like Al Horford. I like Jeff Teague. They definitely have some good players. I think they can get a couple games out of this. But the bottom line is they don't have the experience. And LeBron James, there's no way that he's going to allow the Cleveland Cavaliers to come up short of a finals, of his fifth straight finals, and an opportunity to get another title. He's looking on the other side and saying the Spurs are out of this thing. I just don't see it happen, gentlemen. I think Atlanta, you know, again, can make it somewhat of a series. I think, though, watching Kyrie's Irving health is the thing you want to watch. But LeBron James, just I mean, his dominance in the East Coast, how much power he carries leaving from one team. I mean, we know they added Love, they added J.R. Smith, some other pieces. But, I mean, my God, this was a team that won 20 games last year. And with LeBron coming over there, I mean, you're tabbing on another 40, 45 victories in there, you know, in the Eastern Conference Finals. So I don't think so, gentlemen. I'm looking at Cleveland. You guys are betting men, and I think you guys are going with a consensus pick. If I needed you gentlemen to put money on the line, I don't think you guys are putting money on the Atlanta Hawks versus LeBron James.
Well, to tell you the truth, I would for the simple fact this, and this is why. Because the San Antonio Spurs, who played team ball, and I hate to compare them to the Atlanta Hawks, but I'm only comparing the concept, not the talent level. The Atlanta Hawks are playing the same type of ball, meaning team ball with decent defense, that the San Antonio Spurs have played the last few years against the Miami Heat, and it was successful. San Antonio won one out of the two finals playing team ball against Miami. And it worked against a LeBron James type of team. So I'm thinking this, the talent level, the only player, in my opinion, that's better than the talent level of the Atlanta Hawks is LeBron James. You got a banked up Kyrie Irving, and it doesn't look like he's going to be healthy anytime this season without any rest. So basically, it's LeBron James, and I know LeBron James is the best player on the planet. I understand that, okay? But when you have a team that plays team basketball, the ball is not on to one particular person. You can't take one person out. Like, I'm thinking that they have a better chance of beating a single player and four other inconsistent players, because you never know what you're going to get from the other four from game to game. I'm talking about the Cleveland Cavaliers. Then a team that has five players on the court and five players can beat you, because that's the way they play. They five players can beat you, and they have some pieces on the bench that can also do the same thing. But everybody has their opinion. It's just like, you know, buttholes. Everybody's got one. So I understand that. We have a few minutes, but we're going to go over overtime, and we're going to hit on the subjects that you want to hit on. Now, one of them apparently was what we were just talking about. So Lance, since you jumped on here and you had some thoughts that you wanted to convey. What else did you want to bring up before we decide to get out of here?
Yeah, sure. And like I said, I try to be brief as possible. Love to get some insight from you guys as well. Just wanted to talk a little bit about, this year's draft. You know that Winston and Mariota went late. And again, excuse me, I know I'm behind the curve here, but I haven't been on the show in a couple weeks. I just wanted to say, I think a fair assessment for Jameis Winston as well as Marcus Mariota, in my personal opinion, I think people tend to forget that these are kids. And these guys coming in 20 years old, you're putting a whole franchise on their shoulders. These kids are a couple years removed from high school. So first things first, you know, the quarterback position is such a vigorous and higher position to play. I mean, you figure you got a guy from the time that he drops back or takes the ball from under center, he's got about 3 or 4 seconds to be able to read a defense, make an accurate throw, whether it be a back shoulder, leading him, putting it right on him. You know, he's got to read coverage. He's got pressure coming. He's got to know how to maneuver the pocket. He's got to know how to step up. So there's so much that goes into the quarterback position. That's why it is the most coveted position. But I think a fair assessment, in my opinion, for these quarterbacks who come out nowadays, I don't think that you look at RG3, Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton. I think that those guys, and obviously RG3 has only had the 1 year, but I think those guys are exceptional talents who had a little bit of favor on their side based on the division they went to. But I think these are exceptional talents that they set such a high standard and bar. I don't know if it's fair for us to try to now every rookie quarterback comes in, try to compare them or expect an Andrew Luck or Russell Wilson. Look, that first year that RG3 did his thing before getting injured, you know, excellent job. But that NFC East conference was rather weak at that time. You look at Andrew Luck, excellent. I'm not trying to take any credit away from him, but certainly in the division with Jacksonville and Tennessee, really only one other team in there to really give him any competition, Houston. Russell Wilson, obviously, top five running back, most dominant defense. And I think Cam Newton is a guy that I'm looking at on this list I mentioned. I got to make sure that I give Cam his just due, because as much as teams want to talk about he's just a winner or this, that, and the other, look, say what you want about Cam Newton, but it's a guy who's had no talent around him, really stocked that wide receiver plenty. And I think that in his, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years, they won 3 division titles. So, right. You know, it's about winning. And I think a lot of times he just gets negative pub. But to me, I think Derek Carr of the Oakland Raiders, to me, was a guy that I think is more how I'm looking at the quarterback position now. Because, look, fellas, in a rough AFC West division, you got over there Denver, Kansas City, San Diego, proven playoff teams. He had no talent at wide receiver. His top receiver was James Jones from Green Bay. I think we all know a lot of his stats were bumped up due to Aaron Rodgers and the talent around him. But with right. no talent at wide receiver, no running game, he beat out a starter in preseason. And last year, 3,200 yards, 23 TDs. I was most impressed with the low number of interceptions, less interceptions than Breeze and Brady and Peyton Manning, threw more touchdowns than Russell Wilson, Andy Dalton, some of these guys. So that's going to kind of be my bar moving forward for these quarterbacks. I mean, if Winston comes out this year, had 3,200 yards, 23 TDs, and 12 interceptions as a rookie, to me, that is an outstanding rookie season, especially that low interception count. So, yeah, that was one thing. I hadn't had a chance to touch on the draft, but I just think that the bar that Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson, I guess the most two successful guys out of this bunch, that's a very high standard to ask the rookie quarterback to come in and reach. I think a guy like Derek Carr, to me, for the Oakland Raiders, just did an outstanding job. I don't think he got enough credit last year for what he did in Oakland without really anything. And I think if Winston or Mariota can come in, any rookie quarterback can come in and do those type of things. I think that's a great start to your career.
Well, you have to think that he's only going to go up. I've talked about this before, Lance, that they needed a number one wide receiver and the dynamic trio, I should say. Just like, and I'm not saying that these guys are going to be that, but it seems like you need a very good quarterback. You need a capable, a very good running back, and you need a number one wide receiver. Well, in my opinion, the formula that the Oakland Raiders are putting together is a winning formula. They got Derek Carr as the quarterback. They got just picked up Amari Cooper, their number one wide receiver that they're going to use this year. And then they have a very underrated, and I think this kid's going to be a winner, Latavius Murray. They got a trio sitting there that they're young and they can grow with each other and make a team out of that offense. I don't know if Macau has any comment, but I'm going to give Macau a chance to respond and then I'm going to flip it back to Lance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree with him. You know, I like little David Carr. I mean, I really like this brother back in the day. They really just threw him to the wolves and just threw him up down in Texas.
But yes, that boy could throw. He was unconscious, but he was a real quarterback. He just, I mean, he had what's his name, Andre, but it was too messy. I definitely like David Carr. You know what I mean? He definitely was impressive last year, and you know, I'm still waiting on, you know, my man RG3 to come back in. They got to get that offensive line. You know, it's been like 10 years in the past 10 drafts, they've only taken one offensive lineman in the first round. I mean, it's just been ridiculous with them Redskins. But now they got this dude. I'm excited about him or whatever. So RG will be back. I like Russell too. But Russell has taken advantage of everything that's been put before him. You know, he's got, you know, a good top, you know, a top ranked defense behind him. They got very good. They got a very good GM. They picked the right players. He got a big time back behind him, and they scheme the offense around his talent. Because if you notice, he don't do too much drop back. He don't do too much drop back because that's his weakness right now. But yeah, man. And definitely Andrew Luck, cold beast. I totally agree with you, Lance. That division is real weak. As far as Jameis Winston and Mariota, yeah, they need to lay off them youngins a whole lot more. You know, I think the way that we're coming at these kids now is just ridiculous. It's like these grown-ass men keep putting their whole lifestyle and what they think that these young kids should be doing. But if we went back to each and every one of our, you know, days back when we were 20, 19, and 18, we done did some silly stuff, too. I mean, shoot. Dude tell me I got to hook up for some crab legs. Yeah, I'm going up there and get the jump. And I like the way he trolled the joint. I love the way he trolled it. He took a picture with the Buccaneers hat on, with the crab legs sitting in front of him. I was dying laughing. I was cracking up. It was too funny. But I think these two youngins, we need to sit back and let's see what they're going to do. Of course, I'm probably in the minority, which I like Mariota a little bit better. But we just got to sit back and wait and see what these kids are going to do, man. They come from good pedigree. So we'll see what happens.
All right, Lance, you got anything else that we want to say? What else did you want to come bring up with?
Yeah, sure thing. And I told great points. I agree with both you guys. And we'll be able to talk a little bit more depth when the NFL comes around. This will be a quick one. How sad is it, man, the injury to Dante Fowler, the top draft pick for the Jaguars,
yep,
from Florida?
Yep.
Second straight year that the NFL, and honestly, I mean, these franchises depend on these guys. We had Jadeveon Clowney last year,
right,
top overall pick for Houston, coming in to make a huge impact. He missed the entire season. Now here we are this year with Fowler. Again, that Jacksonville's defense, very sound. I like the pick. Gus Bradley, defensive-orientated coach, that defense really start coming around the second half of the year. And a guy like that coming in with that type of energy, excitement, a hometown product. You know, that's a boost to the franchise, not just, you know, the Jaguars team when you got a hometown product like that. And I just think,
right,
it's, man, sports in general. I mean, it's part of the game. It's always been like that. But, man, what a shame it is that this young kid, like Jadeveon Clowney, you know, so for the franchise, for the fans, I just think it's rather unfortunate, man, to see a talented guy like that now have to. I mean, when you get your career started off like that, and hopefully it works out that way. A lot of players get hurt early in their careers. They're young enough technology that they, you know, bones grow back together. They're good to go. Man, you know, I think we've seen that Blake Griffin, you know, his first year, he had the injury. He's been able to,
right,
rebound. He's helping out the building still. Russell Wilson, Russell Westbrook, another guy, and I'm flipping over to basketball. But just guys who suffered, you know, ACLs and stuff like that, able to come back and do well. So, yeah, man, I just think it's unfortunate. I hate to see young kids like that, man, before they can even get on the football field, just, you know, have to take that step back. So I hope mentally he's tough enough and can rebound. And I mean, I guess at this point we can't even say he can come back and be the same player, because we don't know what he was going to be on an NFL level. So,
yeah, well, I have to say this like this. At least, and I hate to say it like this, it was just an ACL. Wasn't anything else but the ACL. Hopefully he's a young guy. He seems like he's got a good disposition about within himself. And it was a good thing that the Jacksonville honored his contract did the right thing with that. So all he has to do is concentrate and worry about getting himself healthy and getting back to as the same level, if not better, than he was prior to the injury. But yeah, it's a shame that it has to happen. I mean, you have to think about the guy from, oh my God, what's the guy's name? Who was it? Howerman from the Broncos. I think he went down too, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And he went down with an ACL also. He won't be back until next year. So these young guys that get drafted, Howerman got drafted in the third round, if I'm not mistaken. Now have to begin the NFL career, not the year to get drafted, but the following year. So we have to wait and see if they're going to pan out and be an NFL caliber player and what level it's going to be. Lance, you got anything else before we head out of here?
This was my last one. I had something else basketball, but I'll catch you on Thursday. But no, I'll just have to get my chime in on before it gets too late. I know this has been talked about to death, so just want to chime in about the Tom Brady Deflategate situation. Again, excuse me for being tardy on this, guys. But you know what? I just think at the end of the day, I think we now see why Tom Brady and the Patriots organization has been so looked at so negatively and hated or disliked by so many fans and people and sometimes even other players, because I think that everything comes back around. And they had the Spygate thing. And I think that's what people tend to forget, is that prior to the Spygate thing, nobody had any really dislike or dismay or problems with the Patriots. People start disliking the Patriots once they found out that they were, again, doing things to try to or give them a competitive edge. And it just hurts the integrity of the game. And that's when people start disliking New England, saying, okay, you know, you guys are willing to do. And look, I'm not going to attribute Spygate in any way to them beating St. Louis. I just think that their defense really showed up that day. They had some timely plays. I think they just were better than the Rams that particular day. But, you know, I look at New England, and on two different occasions, you're doing things that really ended up, I think the Russell Wilson play, you know, the Super Bowl, the Seahawks thing kind of, you know, allowed New England the opportunity to potentially win. But I'm just looking at New England doing things to take out the champions, help them win. And I just think it hurts the integrity of the game. So I don't care what anybody thought or felt. I just think that the suspension is just, and sometimes it's unfair. But I think what people do sometimes is, you can make a mistake punishing somebody sometime. And if they do something wrong again, even though it may not be right because it's a total separate situation, you can punish them a little more severely. And I think this may have a little bit still some offspring. A lot of people didn't think that Spygate scandal was enough of a punishment. So I just think that it'll be interesting to see if Tom Brady and the Patriots, because they're claiming it's untrue, this, that, and the other. So I'm just waiting to see how this thing plays out. But I think that it makes Tom Brady look really bad. I think it makes the Patriot organization look bad when you'll do anything to win. And again, I think we all felt there was no need to do that, to beat Indianapolis on your home field for a shot to go to the Super Bowl. I mean, my God, how much of a advantage are you trying to get? How worried are you that you're, you know, not going to make another Super Bowl? So I think the punishment was just, and I just think that, you know, cheaters and guys trying to get a competitive edge, whether steroids, deflate. It's not so much what's done. Oh, you know, steroids and deflating the football are different. It's a principle. You're going into this thing saying, you know, I'm doing something that are outside the rules, and I'm doing it because it's going to, or I'm hoping, or the plan is for it to give us an extra advantage to win. And I just think it's no place in the game for it. And I don't know. I'm kind of shocked in the NFLPA and some of these other guys trying to go to bat for Tom Brady when, you know, these guys, they're busted, you know, they're busted. And for them to be refuting this and trying to put on his airs. I think that at some point they just need to bite the bullet. I heard Ryan Clark put it the best, in my opinion, the other day. Fess up, man up, you know. You don't have to come straight out and just say, I blatantly did it. But you do need to take some accountability and some responsibility. So I think in the long run, it'll be interesting to see what our image of Tom Brady is. Certainly a winner, a proven winner. I don't think nobody's going to take anything away from that. But, you know, this is something that I think is certainly going to be a cloud over his career.
All right. Well, Lance, I'm sure glad you brought that up, because that was my last subject before we got out of here. And you probably I wouldn't say you took the sails out of my my ship, but the things that you said, basically with the things I was going to say. With that being said, Mikel, you have any remarks on Deflategate and what took taking place in this last week about the Patriots statement and the Brady statement or appeal to be heard?
Yeah, well, once again, you know, Roger Goodell showing that he really don't know what the hell he's doing. I don't know. I mean, I kind of agree with what Lance is saying, but I kind of don't. You know, I really don't. The Patriots have always been doing this type of stuff. I mean, and Lance, they did have a somewhat of a skirmish before Spygate. It was the Tuck rule, you know. It was the whole thing with Tom Brady, and it was with that quarterback. You know, they was all down with the Tuck rule then, and then when they got rid of it, they were all down with giving. So it's like they have always looked for ways to do that, and Belichick has been unapologetic about being that way. You know, he has always been that way, I think, and that's part of it is to his own demise, but it's like I kind of get where he's coming from, but but when you have that position, you allow for others to make the position that you're cheating, or that, you know, you're not doing it like we're doing it. So, you know, he's always going to be in that position. As far as like the Deflategate, I really think it's much to do about nothing. I really do.
They really. Why you say that?
Because it's more so about the hate for the Patriots and just their long-standing position on being the way that they are. That's what it's a referendum on. I honestly believe that. I don't think, like, there's no doubt in my mind that Tom Brady knew that there was something going on with the footballs or whatever, but I don't really see that it made too much that much of a difference. You know, I really don't see that. I mean, give him a game, give him a fine, that'll be it. Four games is way too excessive. I'm thinking they probably was trying to set up for the appeal. They'll knock it back down to maybe like one, maybe two. However, you got Tom Brady's folks over there saying they're trying to call Goodell in as a witness so he won't be sitting up hearing the appeal. It's just real crazy. The whole thing is just crazy. It's a circus.
Well, let me ask you something. When I say this, I'm going to ask you the question on the two guys, the two equipment managers, all right, that Tom Brady interacted with or supposedly interacted with to get this whatever done, were originally indefinitely suspended without pay. Now they're completely fired. Now, if the organization, who they're saying that we did nothing wrong and we're going to be exonerated from this, showed completely saying that you NFL and whoever else believes that the NFL is right in this, along with the Wells report, that we're going to be shown that we're right and you guys are wrong. If they were innocent, why would they not stand behind the two employees that were two or three people that were targeted instead of summarily just dismissing them. That is awful suspicious, in my opinion. And it's a rule. It's in the books that you can't alter the footballs. They were checked before with the refs and then altered after the refs checked them. That's against the rules. That's against the rules. And you get rid of the two guys that have direct knowledge of the balls. I mean, that's a contradiction, right? You're saying that you're innocent, but we're going to get rid of the two guys that were accused of being involved in this. What's your thoughts on that, Mikal?
I think it's just like a PR move. You know, you just separate yourself from disassociate yourself and separate, distance yourself from the entire situation. That gives me pause and be like, yeah, why y'all do that? It does that, but it doesn't make me be like, okay, yeah, that really had an impact on that game. That really had an impact on New England whooping that team ass.
Well, but that's not what this is about. What this is about is breaking a rule for one, and for a lack of cooperation. That's really a lot what this has to do, because the Wells report said that they weren't, New England and Tom Brady weren't fully cooperative and forthcoming in this investigation. So that's the reason why they got the two picks taken away from him. That's the reason why they got the $1 million fine. And that's the reason why Tom Brady got the four games, because the organization got it, because this is the second time around for the organization in something other than something in addition to what took place before with Spygate and Tom Brady, because he didn't fully cooperate. So that's basically is what I'm talking about.
Hey, I wanted to, great point on that, Tucker. I wanted to add this in there as well, because this happened after the season was over too, and I think this is the problem. That remember in their victory over the Ravens, that they were doing the illegal lining up. Now at the time, it wasn't deemed that way, but after the season, when they went back and reviewed it, they were not, even if it was four plays. So I'm just saying, in a nutshell, between the Tuck rule, between the spy gate, between the flake gate, between this illegal formation, people are just looking at New England and saying, you guys will do any and everything or whatever it takes to try to do it. Why can't you just come out and line up and play football like everybody? Why are you guys constantly looking for these advantages, unfair advantages, to win ball games?
That's what has been successful for them. They've been doing that for years. And see, and that's the point I'm making. You've got to rule on this particular situation, right? I get it though. You've got to rule on the particular situation with Tom Brady and those footballs. And to me, when I look at it, I'm coming up frivolous. One game, right? But if you're giving them four games, taking their draft picks and all like that, you giving them a referendum on all those things you just said. That's the problem I have with it. It's not justice. It's not. It would seem like it's justice, but it's not. Yeah, they have had a pattern of doing this year in and year out. This team is now the most profitable team in the NFL now, above the Dallas Cowboys, above my beloved Washington Redskins, because of how they've done it. They've done these things. They've done it, and they've done it routinely. It's worked, and they're going to keep doing it. But the only way to stop them is to get the joints right when you got them. This is going backlash on Roger Goodell and the NFL so bad. And Tom Brady is the perfect football player to do this. Perfect position. Because he's got the winning smile. He got the money. He got the championships. He got the most profitable team. He with a owner that's got a godload of money. This is going to be a messy nightmare for the NFL, Slim. They're going to make it messy. I want to know what they're going to do now that they're trying to call Roger Goodell in on the stand to testify. That's crazy. Because he's supposed to be hearing the trial, which is real
right.
crazy.
Right.
This is big kangaroo court, man. Big time.
Okay.
They need to. I don't know what exactly they need. They can do to the Patriots. I don't know, because even with this penalty, you know what I'm saying? It still ain't gonna hurt them. It still ain't gonna hurt them. It ain't. Let alone tell the Kraft, yo, you gotta sell the team. Belichick, get out of here. Brady, go ahead and retire. That's the only thing you can do.
None of those three things are going to happen.
Exactly. All right.
All right. Okay. With that being said, all right, we're going to be getting out of here, and I'm going to go around the horn, and I'll be the last one to my last word. I'm going to go to Macau first. Anything that you want to say before we get out of here? Then I go to Lance and then myself. Talk to me, Macau.
I just want to say peace and blessings from TBE land. Hate it or love it, the underdog is always on top. Peace and blessings.
Talk to me, Lance.
That's what's up, man. My man, Macau. Good to hear from you as always, man. Be happy. Look forward to hear from you football season a little more. Yeah, my final note, and Jerry, always, man, thanks for coming, having me on the show. And I apologize. I thought the show was over, so certainly didn't mean to jump ahead of you with that.
Yeah, it's all right. Break. It's okay. No, but, I was going to talk about that anyway.
Okay, cool. My final word is back to LeBron James. Again, listeners out there, I know I'm late. You know, you got talk shows when something happens. We basically got, you know, 1,000 different talk shows talking about the same thing, but just peeling back to LeBron James. And for me, it plays into, and I'm talking about the last week when he hit the game winner in Chicago, when he came out afterwards and let everybody know that I scratched the play and I said, give me the damn ball. I applaud LeBron James in that situation. I think that's what you're looking for and you need to happen. You hear me say all the time, because we mostly focus on football, or my workings on FSN have been about football. And I'm going to tell you this. You've heard me say plenty of times that if a play is called and it is not the right play, the quarterback, as much as the coaching staff is getting blamed too, the quarterback has the opportunity to call an audible and put the right play in. I mean, unless you're going to get fired. You know, I don't know the hierarchy here, but I would certainly think that, you know, if it's a rookie quarterback and he does his own thing and it doesn't work out, then yeah, he's going to be under a lot of fire. But for the most part, the players have control, and the quarterback is the one who can always audible. You tell your coach simply, I seen something that looked better. I didn't think what we called was going to work. I seen something else. So it peels back to Russell Wilson in the Super Bowl having an opportunity to do that. It peels back to a lot of players and a lot of situations why we said, why the hell did they do that? So LeBron James, long story short, he did exactly what I would want a leader and the best player on my team to do, which is when the game is on the line or we've got an important decision to make, by God, if what was called from the sideline ain't the best play to help our team, we scratch that play, and we're going to go with the play that is going to give us the best opportunity to win it. And I think LeBron James wasn't so much trying to slight his coach as everybody was trying to make it out. I think LeBron James was trying to let us know that, look, don't think that I have forgotten about all the criticism that I've taken over the years prior to winning the championship, losing that first year in Miami to Dallas. You know, LeBron James is a guy who people, you know, coming up short, he's scared of the big moment, he can't make big free throws, da da da. So LeBron James simply wanted to let everybody know, I'm that guy, and I'm not afraid of those situations. And when the game is on the line, people need to know, I want the ball. I'm going to get the basketball. As you mentioned about Paul Pierce, miss or not, make or not, whatever happens, I'm going to make sure that my imprint, my hands, are on the game. And I think we, even as much as we hate Tom Brady, you look at the second half of that Super Bowl when New England got down 10. I'm quite sure it didn't come out that way. But Tom Brady, they didn't run that damn football again. Tom Brady says, you know what? I've been through two prior Super Bowls. We came up short. Whether we win this game or not, the football is going to be in my hands. I don't recall New England even running the football maybe more than three times in that second half when they got down 10. So I think you always want your superstar and best player. That's what you pay the guy for. That's what he's the face of your franchise for. You always want your best players to have their imprints on the game. You never want to come out of a situation saying, my God, I should have got it to LeBron. We should have did this. So I think LeBron James did the right thing. And as evidenced now, they're in the Eastern Conference Finals because of his decision to make sure that he got the ball in his hands. No way are we, you know, we're either going to make it, miss it, or go to overtime. But his imprints were going to be on that game. So I think it was a great call on LeBron's part.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Mikal for joining me. I definitely want to thank Lance. Both you guys give me a lot of insight and very opinionated, and I welcome that. On that side note of Russell Wilson, for those of you guys, you probably know, Lance, you probably know. I don't know if Mikal knows. Russell Wilson is trying to get a $20+ million a year contract. The Seattle Seahawks say no way that's going to happen. They say they're tens of millions away from Russell Wilson. So it looks like they don't sign Wilson to what he wants. They're going to go to the next couple of years and franchise tag him. This can get ugly, in my opinion, because I think after the things that Russell Wilson has gotten done, he wants to get paid. I know they relied on Marshawn Lynch and their defense, but Russell Wilson also had a hand in winning a Super Bowl and the success that the Seattle Seahawks has had since he's been there. And now he wants to get paid, and seems like Seattle's balking from that. We'll see what happens in the next stuff. We'll wait and see what happens in the next years. What?
Hey, look. Hey, Jerry, Seattle better stop playing. They better pay that boy. Because that boy will be like, all right, look, since y'all ain't going to pay me, I'm going to go play baseball. I'm trying to tell you. And he will end up getting the same money that he asked you for playing baseball and being an okay player at baseball. Not a great one, just a good one.
Yes. And with that being said, Russell Wilson, it's a possibility that he may take his football and go home and play baseball and be smiling all the way to the bank with his now supposedly new girlfriend, Sierra. Looks like a very good couple. We'll see what happens from there. Talking about stepping up in class, Russell, I hear you. Anyway, what's that?
I got some cover.
With that being said, I'll talk to you guys. Maybe you'll jump into next week, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Master Plan. I am JTAK, the Master. And we are out of here.